There's a thousand pretty women living out there. They're all living the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to Katz with the Dish. This is John Katzlamitas. I write the Katz Report in the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly, and I write for all the titles in Greenspan Media Group. And joining me, as is customary, is Trish McCrone. Trish.
Hey.
What's the word?
Grease.
Love.
Love. Oh, I thought
Survey
grease.
Says.
I thought grease, grease is the word. Ding, ding, ding.
Love is.
Yeah,
the word is love, as the Beatles once said, and grease is the word, as Frankie Valli said.
Yes, Frankie Valli wrote that. Yes, but I actually think that Frankie Valli sang it, but I think that Barry Gibb wrote the song. If I'm not
Barry Gibb wrote
perhaps,
grease.
Yes, I believe so. I really? Can check it. You're on your computer. You could check it.
Let's take a look here.
But one thing about writing songs is that you told me, I believe, after you were with Ringo this past year.
Ringo
part of your
Starr.
2013 highlights
was
that you were with a Beatle, is that you had told me, which is a very personal thing to me, that the show Lucy in the Sky, I mean the show, the song Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds was not in fact about the psychedelic drug LSD.
Yeah, a lot of people were mistaken about that. When it first came out, the song was actually banned on the BBC because the hierarchy at the BBC thought it stood for LSD, which in some hands it would stand for LSD. But John Lennon always said, I think his quote was, "My hand to God, Allah, Buddha, whoever you want. I did not know it was LSD when I wrote it." And it was about, it came to him from Julian Lennon. It came to him with a little drawing from his preschool that was of a little girl that was named Lucy, of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. It was her in the sky with diamonds all around her. And Lucy was a real person
who sat had
next to him. Lupus.
Lupus.
Yep.
So basically, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds has a lupus connection. So therefore, I have to throw that out there because
I've
been in a loop lately.
Lucy of Lucy in the Sky fought lupus until she was in her mid-40s.
Good to know. When I get to my 40s, I'll start worrying.
That's just a fact.
Thank God I've got at least a couple decades till I start get to my 40s and can worry about dying of my disease.
One of the great songs, that was when they were doing a lot of experimental, they were doing a lot of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds at the time anyway.
But. Yeah, exactly. So people thought it. So as you told me that story, I'm laying in bed one night and Julian Lennon was being interviewed and he told that exact same story. And Katz told me that story long before you did, Julian.
I had not known that story. The backstory of the song, the girl, the identity of the girl for a long time. I was reading on my flight up to Idaho some stuff about the Beatles, and there was a description of how that song came to be. And I had always known it was that particular – and one of the Beach Boys, I think, owns that now, like Mike Love. Somebody owns the actual drawing.
Really?
Yeah. But anyway, I'd known that part of it, but I didn't know who Lucy was until I had
there
read it
you
there.
Go. See?
Grease was written by Barry Gibb, by the way.
Thank you. Ding, 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 ding. Wow. See, I'm good. Who would have thought, huh?
Which runs in concert with my long-held belief that all pop culture runs through the movie Grease.
There you go. Well, I mean,
Adrian Smed the other night, speaking of Grease.
We did speak of Grease, too.
Let's talk about this Monday thing they've got going at the Hard Rock Cafe on Paradise
Road.
Yes,
that was awesome. That was awesome.
Yeah,
and
Rick
actually,
Duarte puts on a live locals, a lot of original music going on at the Hard Rock Cafe. Free admission. And we saw Stephanie Sanchez.
Yes,
our friend,
who, by the way, she's brilliant. She did, she just has a new release. I want to say album because that's what I grew up on. You know, album, but
she
it's
has
not.
A, yeah,
it's
which you
a
can
dropping
play,
release, whatever they call it.
You can play
it
on your Victrola.
Exactly.
And it's also on a 4-track and an 8-track. And I think you can hook your CB radio into it.
And my breaker, brick phone. And my
breaker 1-9. I got some Stephanie.
Wait, let me call you
this
on my phone.
This is Vegas Skinny. I need a 1036 here. Those of us who once operated
it's
CB
dishy
radio.
Eyes.
Do they even have CBs anymore?
I don't know. I think so. I don't know.
I don't know.
Awesome.
On the road, wouldn't that be something? You don't hear about them anymore.
You know, there's a show called,
next
there's a station called Clue, I think it's called, a station, or I don't know what it's called. But anyways, they run Charlie's Angels reruns and $6 Million Man and Bionic Woman and my all-time favorite, Magnum PI. It's a cable channel on Cox Cable. So every once in a while, I find myself watching because you know that all of my dreams, it seems to be that most of my dreams somehow have a Tom Selleck as Magnum PI appearance in them somewhere.
I guess my new New Year's resolution then is to buy some Hawaiian shirts and grow a mustache. And get some lifts. What was Selleck, 6'5"? I'm almost there. I'm
very close.
My swarthy content, I can play a little bit of volleyball. I own a firearm.
There you go. Yeah. Well, the other night, they had the one, it was called Angel Eyes, and it was Charlie's Angels were truckers. And they talked on the CB the whole time. This is Angel Eyes.
This was on Charlie's Angels?
Yes. It was Cheryl Ladd was pretending to be, and she all of a sudden had the southern accent. She's like, hot breaker, breaker, all my good buddies. This is Angel Eyes. It was pop culture. Okay, so enough about the past. Let's talk about, we were on the way to the present. Stephanie Sanchez is amazing, was in Fantasy for 10 years.
Right.
Just an incredible performer. And she wrote over the last year or so, she wrote a lot of new music. And she kind of, I think, debuted pretty much a lot of the tracks. I don't know if it was a debut, but I'm calling it that because I hadn't heard them before. At this event at the Hard Rock, which I had no idea, the one on Paradise and Harmon, mm-hmm. the actual cafe, not the hotel,
right.
that they do this incredible thing every Monday.
Yeah, and Rick Duarte, who's a very busy musician around town, who I was reminded that night was one of the background singers in the Sgt. Pepper Cheap Trick show at the Paris.
You took me to that. That was amazing.
Mm-hmm. And he puts it together every week. So Mondays, and it starts at about 8 and ends at about 11. Unless it starts earlier and ends later, which it did this week, and it's a cool hang. So.
But we sat next to Adrian Zmed,
and all roads lead through Greece. Now, Adrian Zmed has his sons are in a band called the Janks, and they're really good. By the way, they're recording with Pat Thrall here at the studio at the Palms, or a little rock outfit.
I had no idea that his sons were.
Yeah, they're very good. Adrian has the record of being in Greece more than anybody in history. He's been in the show in four different decades on stage.
Wow.
Originally as Zuko. And then more recently, last year, he was in a version of it in L.A. where he played Teen Angel.
Teen Angel. I was just about to say, that's like kind of the last, last hurrah.
But the great thing about Teen Angel, you could do Vince Fontaine, right?
Yeah, there you go.
But the Teen Angel, you can play that until forever. But
yeah, because all you do is come out and sing a teenage.
So he's been in, let's count it out. It might have been five decades, actually. 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. Actually, five different decades.
But he also, though, was the second lead. A British actor, Michael Caulfield, I think was his name.
Maxwell Caulfield,
who married one of the Mills sister, not Haley, the other one. The one that was in Nanny and the Professor.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is all this culture
nearly,
goes on. Yes.
This role nearly ended his career.
Who?
Caulfield in Greece.
Really?
He was a rising star. This is kind of a famous story as I understand it. He was a rising star, was going to be the next leading man in Hollywood, and then Greece 2 happened to him, and he kind of went into
Michelle Pfeiffer came out of
Michelle Pfeiffer, but she didn't play a main role in the
movie. Yes, she was. She was the female lead. She was the female
lead. Was she prominent in the movie?
Yeah.
That prominent?
Yeah, she was the female love interest of Maxwell Caulfield.
Well, Zmed came out of it all right, too.
Yeah,
he was on Solid Gold. He was on Dance Fever.
Yeah, Dance Fever was awesome. Stage.
Great guy, too.
So great.
And he's always said that Grease 2 is the truest version of the stage show. More so than the original.
Really?
That it played out like it was supposed to on stage. I think it was just the comparison with the original Grease.
Yeah, it was hard to do. It was very,
if you just released Grease 2 as the movie, it would have probably been a lot better.
But you know what is funny is that I look back at it. Stocker Channing in Grease 1, who, by the way, Rizzo, I did it in my younger days, that role. And in the second one, Lorna Luft was in her 40s, I think, when she played Adrian Zmed's love interest, who was supposed to be 18. Liza Minnelli's daughter, Lorna Luft, was in Grease 2, and I believe she had to be at least in her late 30s. And she was playing a high school student.
Well, the whole thing, because Adrian lives in Vegas now, so we see him every once in a while, and he was there to support
Stephanie
mm-hmm. and his wife, Lissa, who performed with Stephanie in a number of shows in town. Is friends with her, so that was kind of the scene we had at the Hard Rock Cafe, as it turns out.
I was really, really surprised. At how many people were there. I hadn't seen a lot of people.
Yeah, it was it's a new thing, and I'd only seen one other live performance at that particular venue, and a lot of people don't think of it because the new Hard Rock on the Strip has had a lot of live music. It's got a big stage and everything, but
I gotta say, being a local, I actually preferred going there because it's such easy access. You know what I mean? That that corner. I mean, the one thing that I will say is I love the Hard Rock on the Strip. I think it's really cool. It's got a great scene and it does so much great business. But as a local, it's very hard to get to.
Yeah.
As far as parking, like you have to park across at Monte Carlo, or you have to.
I park at the Monte Carlo, and I drive around so much in this city that I know all the nooks and crannies of all the parking everywhere. I really do.
Yeah, you do.
Know, I just drive everywhere, and I know.
And you drive me a lot of places.
I know,
especially
and we go
lately.
To all these places, and the Hard Rock Cafe is among the more difficult places to park because it's on the east side of the street, and it's just very difficult to get in. So I always park at the Monte Carlo and walk across. I don't even deal with the entrance at that place.
Yeah, it's
got a beautiful. Once you get there, it's got
gorgeous,
a great.
Yeah.
First time I saw Imagine Dragons, with super group now, was at
that.
And I think it was like our fourth or fifth gig in 2009. That was a big deal for them then. Was at Hard Rock Cafe. So.
But it's a very cool thing every Monday. And by the way, check out Stephanie's music. It's really good, Stephanie Sanchez.
Yep.
It's really, and she's been a you know, born and raised here in Las Vegas. Has been in a lot of different shows. Has a great story all her own. And she's been on the show before, so you can look up our past episodes where she talks about, you know, working for Bob Stupak back as a teenager
Vegas
and things
world.
Like that. Yeah. So a lot of great stories. And you know, and it's really really top notch music. And it's just out, so she's selling her music. Look it up.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break and return with our guest, one of our favorites, who's just won a big award back in New York, the great Clint Holmes. But first, Josh Bell and movies, so stick around. I know we will.
Hi, this is Billy Johnson of the Las Vegas Wranglers, not in the NHL, and you're listening to Cats with a Dish. Yeah!
Solo act?
Yeah, now.
Now? Used to what? Work with a cat? Every time he'd play a C major, he'd puke a hairball.
I used to have a partner.
What happened?
Threw himself off the George Washington Bridge.
That's Oscar Isaac as the title character, along with John Goodman, in Inside Llewyn Davis, one of two big awards contender movies opening in Las Vegas this week. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters. The 1960s set story of a week or so in the life of B-list folk singer Llewyn Davis, from filmmakers Joel and Ethan Coen, plays out as a quintessentially Coen-esque fable. The movie is a series of frustrating, comical encounters, anchored by Isaac's humane, deeply felt performance as Llewyn. Isaac makes the loudish Llewyn sympathetic and soulful, and the movie is an often heartbreaking look at the way that even the most talented artists can end up with nothing but thwarted dreams. I give Inside Llewyn Davis 4 stars out of 5. Also opening this week is Her, writer-director Spike Jonze's sci-fi story of a man, played by Joaquin Phoenix, who falls in love with his computer operating system, voiced by Scarlett Johansson.
So what was it like being married?
Well, that's hard for sure. But there's something that feels so good about sharing your life with somebody.
How do you share your life with somebody?
The love story between the main characters in Her is affecting and real, even though one of the characters is a machine, and Johansson gives a wonderful performance with just her voice. The movie's sci-fi conceit sort of falls apart in the last act, but it has an impressive look and intriguing ideas. I give Her 3.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. Joining us now is the monthly headliner at Cabaret Jazz at the Smith Center for the Performing Arts and Symphony Park in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Wow.
He's also the recipient of the Best Male Celebrity Vocalist Honor awarded by BroadwayWorld.com. He has a lot going on, and we're thrilled he could make time for us, especially today. Welcome back to the show and back into our presence, Clint Holmes.
Great to see you guys.
But by the way, you forgot to mention that he's about to be the clay court champion of Las Vegas.
Oh, Las Vegas.
Exactly.
There are two clay courts
in
Vegas,
the entire city,
and he's on one of them.
I was
right
on
now.
One of them, so I'm at least tied.
There you go.
Bob Randolph is the opponent, and I put 100 large on Clint today before this match. So.
Yes, and you know, right now we're even. I had to leave. I had a radio show.
Is it a forfeit? I hope not.
He'll consider it a forfeit.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
I consider it a victory.
It's one of those extended injury breaks that Jimmy Connors
exactly.
used to take all the time.
He still thinks I'm in the locker room.
Getting it rubbed down.
That's my hamstring again. What am I going to do?
What can I tell you? I'll be there in an hour.
Anyway, thanks for coming down. You are still active, obviously, playing tennis still.
Hey,
man,
I'm trying to
great.
Still
trying
active?
To stay
what
upright.
Is he talking about? Like, he's not skating.
No, I mean, on the
court. 6 years old.
You know,
I'm
but
talking
I
about
Ken.
I'm talking about on the court.
I'm still active.
What I mean to say is you're still playing a lot of tennis, even though the clay courts at Sterling Club are not open anymore.
Yes,
that's where I'm going with this.
Well,
you're
that,
still playing a lot of clay
real
court
long,
tennis.
Circuitous way to get there.
I was just about to say, I took it as a backhanded.
Backhanded? Wow. Well, I'll volley right back.
I'm going to take a bow on that one.
It was more like a volley.
Yeah. No. You know, tennis, I love it. I love tennis.
You do love tennis.
Given a way to exercise, that will always be my first choice. You know?
Yeah.
So.
It is. It's good. You work out everything in tennis.
It's like people who love golf. You just, first of all, you're just concerned about hitting the little yellow ball. That's the only thing in your brain for the while you're playing. You know, it's a wonderful sport. And I hope I get to play it for another
golf?
20 years. No, I don't.
Not yet.
No. I mean, I've played golf and I'm just horrible.
It's always there.
Well, he's not that active, Katz. He's active, but he's not.
Are you
that
a golfer?
Active.
Are you a golfer, Katz?
I am long and wrong. On the golf course.
Okay, I'm short and wrong.
I haven't played in a while, but my feeling about golf is it's always there. When everything else, when you're done with all the other stuff,
right?
Golf is there and you can play that until...
That's a good point.
You know, I was junior golf champ.
Wow.
At Avon Oaks Country Club, and I dated just about every tennis pro in the country. So therefore, I kind of have,
there's some information.
And my mom's here, and she just like shook her head and
became embarrassed. Well, apparently, Dishy's also still very active.
I was going to say Tiger Woods springs to mind.
No, tennis pro. I did date a couple golfers now that
you
I think about it.
Yeah, right.
And tennis. Right. I didn't play very well, but I looked good, obviously, on the court.
I get it.
I dressed the part. So now let's talk about New York.
Let's talk about love.
Speaking of serving aces.
Wow. New York. Yeah. Actually, it's
what
great
is this
to be
award?
Home.
Explain this award to us.
Okay. They do this every year for Broadway, off-Broadway, and cabaret in New York, the BroadwayWorld.com Awards. Somehow or other, I got nominated, and I seriously don't know how, but I got nominated for this.
There's no vote involved in getting nominated, right?
No, the editors for that website.
There's a panel of people who decide.
And so we did a show at the Carlisle in October in New York called Stop This Train, which based on the John Mayer song Stop This Train. And so I was nominated for that show as Best Male Celebrity Singer. And the other people, what was really cool is three of the other people are Tony Award winners. Norbert Leo Butts, who's got two Tony Awards and who's in Big Fish right now on Broadway. Matthew Morrison, who was in South Pacific
and Glee.
And Paolo Zotwa, who was the star of South Pacific on Broadway. They were all in it. So I kind of thought, well, it'd be great to come in fourth. It'd be kind of behind those. I'm not a New Yorker. I'm a Las Vegan, you know.
One of those things where you're in the field, so.
I'm in the field. I thought that'd be kind of fun. And then, so we put it up on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And all of our friends and fans in Vegas and East Coast started to go, well, we'll vote. And suddenly I moved like into third place, and I'm like, wow, this is kind of
then you got competitive.
Then I did. Like, then I, you know, Kelly was
like,
making
I'm
fun of me. I'm like looking at my iPad every 8 minutes to see did anything change that I moved up to. Am I in second place? Am I in third? And then 3 days before it was over, 2 days before it was over, I went into first place and ended up in first place. So
you kicked Mr. Shoe's butt from Glee. Wow.
Well, I'm sure he was probably doing other things while I was coercing friends into voting.
I love it. So in other words, Clint Six, Mr. Shoe's bagel, the big zero.
Yeah, there you go.
Tennis talk.
Yeah, tennis talk.
That's awesome, Clint. Well, you've been doing this a lot, though. You've been doing this. Talk about how this whole thing started, where you kept going out to Cafe Carlisle, correct? Mm-hmm. Keep going out to do this. How did this all
You really
come
want
about?
To know? It's kind of an interesting story, actually. After I closed Harris, where I ran for almost 7 years, one of the things I wanted to do was get back into New York. And you know, I've had this Broadway show that I've written that I still have major aspirations to get to New York. Mm-hmm. Okay, so. I told my agent, I said, get me booked in Feinstein's or Birdland or somewhere in New York. And he came back to me, this is 5 years ago, and said, you know what? They're not interested in a Vegas guy. And I went, what are you talking about? So I was in New York and I was at Feinstein's and I ran into Michael Feinstein. He was having a drink in the little club outside of his room. So I went up to him and we knew each other a little bit. And I said, blah, blah, blah. And I said, by the way, I would love to work your room. And he goes, oh, would you? Oh my God. And I go, well, yeah, I would love to. And he said, well, here's the number, call. And like literally a week later, we had a date at Feinstein's. So I don't know what my agent was talking about. But that started it. That was three-ish years ago. And we got, you know, nice notices in the New York Times and stuff. And then the Carlisle offered a show 3 weeks doing a tribute to Bobby Short, who played the Carlisle for 37 years. And so we did that. And then that got great reviews. And then we went in to do our Paul Simon, Cole Porter show, which we originated here.
Yes, at Smith Center.
Yeah, yep. Smith Center. And that, you know, and so now we go back last year and did the Stop This Train show.
And the we here is you and Jeffrey Nye.
Jeff yeah, and I. And Larry Moss.
Larry, yeah, the great acting coach.
He's a great director and acting coach. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Nyman, my musical director and arranger. And Cecilia Johnson, who has been our producer through all this. So it's, and so it, what's happened is we've just kind of gotten accepted, if you will. And that's what this award really means. Like John said to me, he said, somehow I feel like your career would probably go on without the award.
I was honest, not to be skeptical.
No,
throughout this whole process, I was thinking, okay, this will be one way or the other. It's not going to make a measurable difference in your career arc, whether you get Just Another Man back to New York or not, or whether you sell tickets in Las Vegas or not, whether you win this award. But it is important to you in a grander scheme, right?
I suppose so. I suppose even just for I want to say my ego, but it's not really that. It's more like New York is a place where, just like Las Vegas is. Las Vegas is a place where the best of the best go. New York is a place where the best of the best go. So to be accepted in those places makes me feel like I've accomplished something. Makes me feel like I accomplished something in my life that means something and is kind of not measurable in money and not measurable in fame. It's just it's a person, more of a personal.
Like you talk
triumph.
About the badge, the badges.
Yeah, the badges. Mm-hmm. Jerry Lopez talks about the badges, that when they go, well, you're not really this, you go, well, I have a badge right here that says some people think I am.
Yeah.
You know, you know what I mean.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's great.
So. That's really what it is, and I do have aspirations to do my show in New York, and it helps.
But now I know that you're talking about your show that you wrote that's autobiographical in a lot of ways. The show that you wrote, but now as far as doing the cabaret shows, the different kind of cabaret shows, would it be that you would want to maybe try to set up some sort of a residency like you have at the Smith Center in New York?
Well, that's interesting. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think I'd want to do that because this is home, you know. I want to go there and I want to go to either off-Broadway or on-Broadway and do my show. And that may be all there is to it. I mean, you know, shows run however long they run. I mean, when I tell people I ran 7 years at Harris, or the people who have run, you know, a decade here, they look at you like, my God, give me a year. You know,
this is a Broadway.
This is a Broadway prism. Yeah. So to go there and run 6 months, a year would be an amazing thing. And that may be the point at which I go, okay, let me go back home and be in Vegas. I don't know. It's just a part of, Larry Moss once said to me, Larry Moss being my director and an acting coach said to me, do you know why you want to play New York so badly? And I said, why? And he said, because you know you can. He said, and therefore you want to do that and you want to have that. Mm-hmm. So I have been, you know, these dates are wonderful. The Carlisle is a real special place, has a real history, you know, great people play there. And so I'm honored to play there. And when they poke their head up and go, oh, that was excellent, makes you feel great.
How close are you to actually getting the play? And we've been calling it Just Another Man. I don't know if that's a title.
I don't either.
But
at this point, I really don't know what the title is.
If it gets to Broadway, you will name it whatever they want you to name it.
The John Castaneda story.
Open and close on one night.
And one night. But what a night it'll be.
It would be a barn burner. How close are you right now to realizing that dream, either on or off Broadway? I know Larry's all about this. He's in town a lot. And you obviously are still working on it.
In some ways, we're closer than we've ever been in the ways that are important to awards like this and being seen in New York and having a presence in New York. In other ways, I'm diverted in so many directions that my focus hasn't been on it other than that. So, but the real ways, you know, it comes down to money. It's like everything else.
Yeah.
You know, to do a Broadway show, you're looking at $7 to $10 million. It's huge.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at the right theater. You're looking at the right timing. You're looking at the perfect script. You look at all of those things. So it takes time. So we have really done that work. And I would say creatively, we're probably 80% there. So now the other percent is the
business,
money, the business of it. And that's why New York. That's why go there. That's why be accepted there. That's why win an award there. All of those things help serve that purpose, the business purpose.
Well, you know what other badge you have? As my opinion, which, you know, of course, I hold in very high esteem, my own opinion, but that you have the badge for the best show commercial of all time. Oh. The commercial to have a show, You in the Shower, will forever go down as my favorite. Out of all the shows, we have all these shows in town that they all do commercials on TV. And when you were at the Golden Nugget, yes. I mean, this has to be, what, 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
It was 99.
99.
Wow, 15, almost 15 years ago. And you were in the shower singing. And what was the song again?
For the first time.
Oh, yeah.
For the first time, I am looking in your eyes. Yeah.
All of a sudden, you see people like zombies, you know, like zombies are very big right now. Like The Walking Dead, basically. They're all just like walking. You don't know what's happening. And everybody is going outside of your home, like being drawn to your singing in the shower. It was one of the best commercials.
It was a very cool.
To this day, no show
has had
a better commercial.
Well,
I think
maybe I'll
do
it again. But here's the story that goes with that. My daughter, you know, my family was still living back east at the time. And I was out here trying to kind of, you know, forge and be here. So I fly my family out and pick them up in the limo at the airport. And my daughter, Brittany, was at the time 16 years old. And there's this billboard of me in the shower. Right? And so I say, look, your dad has a billboard. And she looks at it and she says, ugh, I could so not live here. So she was humiliated by that shower commercial. So, you know, we all have different.
Well, Brittany now has that badge. My dad was on a billboard in a shower.
In the shower. And I'd like to forget ever seeing that.
She is so awesome.
Seriously, to this day, I will never forget that. It was the most creative commercial. And so props to you.
Steve's idea. Steve Wynn's idea.
Oh, it was.
That was Steve Wynn's idea. Yeah.
Did that campaign really work?
That campaign was, and whatever his advertising agent, I don't remember that. But yeah, it was Steve's idea. And I remember when they talked to me about it, it was like, really? Are you sure? And they filmed it. I mean, I was in a shower in someone's home, you know, for about, I think my skin had shriveled up by the time we finally got through shooting.
The only
that
thing
commercial.
That would make this even better is if you were singing the playground in my mind in the shower.
In the shower. Well, here's what I thought the next one should be. The next one should be in the shower, and as they pull back, Bill Fane sitting there playing piano in the bathroom.
The whole band sitting there playing piano.
What was that movie? That was in a Mel Brooks movie, in Silent Movie. They had a scene like that where Burt Reynolds was taking a shower, and then all of a sudden they panned out, and all of his friends are in there and lathering him up. And stuff.
It was like, well, yeah, we didn't have that.
You could have the entire bag of, you know, Wiedemeyer and
the whole thing now. Jeffrey in there would be great.
Well, now, see, we already have the take two of that next commercial for the Smith Center.
Waterproof
I think the Smith Center would probably not be into that.
You could have Myron jump in and
Myron
break it up.
Yes,
you
know, exactly.
The voice of reason. We got a whole campaign going here.
Okay.
So let's talk about, you're coming back again this weekend. Cabaret Jazz tonight.
Tonight.
What are we going to see here? You try to do something different every weekend. What's this going to be about?
Yeah. You know what? It's kind of best of 13. We've taken moments. You know, we do it. Basically, to some extent, a new show every month. So we've got, I think we did 10 shows last year. So we've kind of taken some of the things that we loved from those shows and put them together. So with a couple of new things. You know this tune it's a group called A Great Big World called Say Something?
Oh my gosh.
We're doing that.
Oh, wow. I heard him sing it live at the American Music Awards with Christina Aguilera.
It's such a cool, simple. It's one of those songs that when I hear it, I go, why didn't I write that?
I got goosebumps the first time I heard the song.
Me too. Yeah. So Kelly and I are doing that.
Oh, wow.
Kelly's going to play Christina Aguilera and I'm going to play the band. So that's new. And a couple of other things that are new. I'm getting ready to do a Ray Charles tribute with Take Six and Nina Freeland and Kirk Whalum, and we're doing it in Atlanta, and then we're bringing it here to Reynolds Hall in the Smith Center.
Oh,
so I'm going to do a couple of those Ray Charles things too, because I have to start learning them. I've got 10 songs in that show to sing. So that's what this month will be. And then in February, we're going to do Stop This Train, the show that we did in New York that won the award, which we've not done here yet.
Great.
And that'll be at Cab Jazz.
That'll be
at
Cabaret Jazz.
Make sure that you go tonight to see Clint Holmes at the Cabaret Jazz.
Tonight, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon. All right, with that, anyway, Clint Holmes, congratulations on everything. It's always a pleasure to see you.
It's great to see you both.
In all variety of attire. And
go back and win.
Go back and beat Bob in your singles match.
So much better with the dishes here, you know that?
I know it is.
Last time you were out of town. And, you know.
That's true of so many things.
I missed you.
At Cabaret Jazz tonight, Saturday and Sunday, congratulations on everything you do, and we're going to have you back again soon. I promise you that.
Thanks, brother.